From the unexplained to the mundane, come join us on a journey to the fringe.
Hello and welcome to Journey to the Fringe, where the fringe festivities come to bear fruit. We are your podcast hosts, Taylor and Chelsea, and today I need to set a scene for you. It's Christmas Eve, fireplaces crackle, and somewhere in the distance you hear it. That unmistakable sound, bells. Maybe it's Santa's sleigh gliding across the sky, or maybe it's something older, stranger. Tonight, we're following the sound of bells down a darker path, because in the world of fringe folklore, bells don't just signal joy. They warn, they lure, they haunt.
Oh boy.
From the mournful toll of the bell buzzard to the mimicry of swamp-dwelling bell bottoms, the ghostly chimes of phantom churches and fairy crossings, these are the creatures that ring in the season with something far more chilling than cheer. So pour yourself some hot cocoa, hang your stockings with care, and maybe keep one ear open, because not every bell you hear this Christmas is jingling for joy.
Oh man.
We're starting our dark descent not on a snowy roof, but deep in the wetlands, because not all bells are carried on the wind. Some ring from the water to draw you in. Our first cryptid is a creature that thrives on deception, a swamp dweller whose chimes are the last sound its victims ever hear. Let's wade into the mire and talk about bell bottoms.
What?
There's a cryptid called bell bottoms, Chelsea.
Do they look like pants?
Mm-mm. Bell bottoms are grotesque, semi-aquatic cryptids believed to dwell in bogs, lake shallows, and abandoned irrigation trenches. Their names come from the distinctive bell-shaped bodies which rise from the water like submerged traps.
Oh.
According to Urbellum's Cryptid Compendium, they are part predator, part decoy creature that mimic the sounds of whimpering prey or emit bell-like charms to lure the curious to the water's edge. These creatures are said to have faces that shift or resemble the person's fears or desires, making them especially dangerous to the lonely or emotionally vulnerable.
Yeah, that's pretty terrifying.
Their presence is often marked by muddy footprints, trembling docks, or unexplained laughter echoing from beneath the surface. They are said to delight in secrets, especially those spoken aloud near water. Some tales claim that bell bottoms can store voices and replay them to confuse and lure victims. Weirdly enough, there's not a lot of writing about bell bottoms. The Urbellum's Cryptic Compendium has pretty much everything, and he goes into great detail about the weaknesses and wards. So at least this one you can ward off.
Okay, good. But it's a pretty terrifying creature, I would say. I didn't even think that I shouldn't be telling my secrets near water. I hate to know how many secrets have been told there.
Where else seems safer than near the water?
It's true.
To tell your secrets.
It seemed like the safest place to me, so that's where I was going. And I don't think there's anything creepier than a creature that knows and presents as all your worst fears. That's probably why he's a water monster, because I hate water.
I mean, to you, yes. I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
But Chelsea, don't worry. It seems fairly straightforward to ward off. All you need is a couple things. One of them can be dust of mustard, the primary weakness. Sprinkling mustard powder near the water's edge is said to keep them at bay.
What is that?
Just mustard powder.
Oh, like the spice?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna go pack that up right after this episode.
If that doesn't work, apparently iron buckets, the sound of iron clanging, disrupts their mimicry. Also, if you have nothing on you, direct eye contact is said to make them recoil from being seen clearly.
Okay.
And sunlight on reeds. So hopefully there's some reeds around. They avoid areas where sunlight reflects off water.
What a random list of things.
Yeah. I like how it goes from, like, you're not gonna have this around you to, oh yeah, just look at them.
Sometimes direct eye contact is the hardest thing to do, though, especially if they're, like, weird looking.
Depends. Yeah, but to be fair, they probably think you're weird looking too.
It's true.
It just seems to be, like, socially
awkward. So maybe they won't be able to look me in the eye.
Yeah.
That seems like the hardest one.
And it's funny, because the details suggest a creature that thrives on deception and darkness, but fears clarity and confrontation. And that's, we're going from the least information to the most information in these stories. So that one, like I said, there was, like, one story on it. The next one too, we'll probably do an episode on them on their own at a later point, but I had to include them just because bells are something that's associated with them. We're moving on from the mud and mire, from a bell that lures you into physical danger, to something far more enchanting, yet equally mysterious. In the British Isles, a bell can signal a completely different kind of presence. Instead of grotesque swamp dwellers, we're talking about the delicate spectral chimes that signal the passing of a fairy procession, or the opening of a door to the other world. Now we're stepping from the swamp into the twilight air to talk about fairies.
Oh, that's nice.
In folklore across the British Isles and beyond, the delicate chimes of bells have long been entwined with the presence of fairies. These spectral sounds, soft, melodic, and often heard without a visible source, are said to signal the passing of a fairy procession or the opening of a portal to the other world. Known as fairy bells, these ethereal tones might drift through the twilight air, luring wanderers towards enchanted glades or fairy rings. In some tales, the bells are instruments of enchantment, drawing the curious into a trance or marking the movements when time slips sideways. But bells also serve as a paradox in fairy lore. While they can summon or signal the fae, they're equally known as wards against them. In Celtic and Scandinavian tradition, the ringing of church bells were believed to drive away fairies, trolls, and other spirits. Their sacred resonance disrupting the magic of the unseen. This duality, bells as both invitation and banishment, reflect the complex, often contradictory nature of fairy folklore. Even today, echoes of this belief persist in modern pagan and druidic rites. Bells are sometimes rung during solstice ceremonies to call fairies to the circles or to mark transitions between worlds. In the natural world, certain woodland flowers like the bell-shaped campanula or disporum are known as fairy bells, believed to be used by fairies as hats, cups, or musical tools. Whether heard in the hush of a forest or imagined in the shimmer of moonlight, the sound of bells remains a potent symbol of the liminal, the magical, and the unseen. So the next time you hear a faint chime with no clear source, ask yourself, is it the wind or is it something older, stranger, and far more enchanting?
I like that one.
We move now from the delicate spectral chimes of the British Isles to a much heavier, more grounded kind of bell, and across the ocean in the southern United States, where there's no enchantment or otherworldly portal signaled by the sound. Here, the bell is a simple, mournful toll, and it is an absolute, undeniable harbinger of death. Leaving the twilight air of the fairy crossings and stepping into the shadows of a truly unsettling American legend, the Belled Buzzard.
Never heard of him.
The Belled Buzzard is one of the most haunting and peculiar figures in American folklore, particularly rooted in the southern United States during the 19th and 20th century. Described as a turkey vulture or buzzard with a bell inexplicably tied around its neck.
That's creepy.
This creature was more than just a curiosity. It was widely regarded as a harbinger of doom. The eerie tolling of its bell, often heard before the bird was even seen, was believed to signal impending disaster. Communities across Tennessee, Kentucky, Virginia, and beyond reported sightings of the belled buzzards as early as the 1850s, with the legend gaining traction during times of crisis. One of the most chilling associations came in 1878 when the bird was reportedly seen in Brownsville, Tennessee during a devastating yellow fever epidemic. By the 1880s and 90s, the belled buzzard had become a media sensation. Small town newspapers across the South and Appalachia chronicled its appearances, often linking them to local tragedies like floods, fires, or outbreaks of disease. In 1885, a sighting in Wheeling, West Virginia was followed by a deadly flood, further cementing the bird's reputation as a supernatural omen. Some articles speculated that pranksters had tied bells to buzzards for sport, but others treated the creature as a singular, possibly immortal entity. The legend even reached national audiences when Irvin S. Cobb published The Story of the Belled Buzzard in the Saturday Evening Post in 1912. The 20th century brought more sightings, including a 1930s report in the Troy Messenger of Alabama, where a witness recounted, quote, "I had often heard of such things, but this was the first time I had ever seen a belled buzzard," end quote. In 1930, the Hagerstown Daily Mail in Maryland claimed the, quote, "original belled buzzard," end quote, had been captured on a canal towpath, and another sighting was reported nearby Wood Point the following year. These articles often featured vivid poetic language, with one describing the bird's return as, quote, "its mournful toll echoing across the valley," end quote. And Chelsea, here's just a smattering of articles from way back in the day about it. In the 1800s, there are dozens of articles across Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Delaware, Georgia, South Carolina, and North Carolina, where they're talking about the bird's tolling bell said to precede fires, floods, or outbreaks. In Wheeling, West Virginia in 1885, a local newspaper described the buzzard flying overhead before a deadly flood, reinforcing its ominous reputation. As I said earlier, the Troy Messenger in Alabama reported a belled buzzard flying low over farms in 1913, with witnesses describing it as, quote, "a small calf's bell tied to its neck," end quote. Farmers wondered who had belled the buzzard, when and where. in Brownsville, Tennessee in 1878 during a yellow fever epidemic. Newspapers connected the bell buzzard to the calamities, cementing its role as a harbinger of doom. Quote, "The bell buzzard has been seen again and death walks close behind," end quote. This chilling line connected the bird directly to devastating epidemics. From the 1912 Irving S. Cobb story, he says, quote, "The bell buzzard is no myth. He's a feathered fact, and his tolling bell is the funeral knell of the South," end quote. In Woodpoint, Maryland, which I believe we mentioned earlier, quote, "The bell buzzard has returned its mournful toll echoing across the valley," end quote, and that's in February of 1931. Now, sightings of the bell buzzard faded dramatically after the early 20th century, and by the 1940s, the legend had largely disappeared from newspapers and public consciousness. Several factors contributed to this decline. In the 19th century, small-town newspapers often blended fact and folklore, publishing sensational stories to entertain and alarm. As journalism professionalized in the 20th century, editors became less likely to print cryptid sightings without hard evidence, and the bell buzzard, once a media darling, lost its platform. The buzzard itself, a symbol of death and decay, lost its folklore potency as newer cryptids and omens emerged. Creatures like Mothman, Jersey Devil, and Bigfoot captured public imagination with more dramatic traits.
That's true.
The bell buzzard, quiet tolling bell, couldn't compete with the glowing eyes and monstrous footprints. The bell buzzard was deeply tied to oral storytelling in Southern and Appalachian communities. As rural populations shifted and oral traditions waned, the legend faded. Without regular retelling, it became a historical curiosity rather than a living myth. Some sightings were debunked as pranks, too, with farmers or boys tying bells to buzzards for fun. And once this explanation gained traction, the mystery really lost its edge. Without the aura of unknown, bell buzzards became less compelling and died off. So there's not much talk about it after the 1940s.
That is a weird one. I don't know what I think about that.
And though sightings have ceased, the bell buzzard survives in folklore archives, regional ghost story collections, and occasional cryptid forums. It remains a fascinating case study in how a simple anomaly, a bell on a bird, can evolve into a widespread omen of death. His story also offered insight into the role of media in shaping and sustaining cryptid legend. We move now from the unsettling grounded toll of the belled buzzard, a bell that foreshadowed death on land, to a sound that is both lamented and a perpetual warning ringing from the depths. We're leaving the dry folklore of the American South for the coasts of Europe, where bells toll not from a bird, but from entire lost civilizations.
What?
These are the sounds of divine judgment and vanished kingdoms.
What? Like what kingdoms?
Oh man, Chelsea, I had no idea that there are so many lost cities off the northwest coast of Europe.
There is? See, I was thinking where you're going with this was maybe like a ghost ship, like with a foghorn or something.
Oh,
but
maybe.
No, it's a lost civilization.
Across Europe and North America, legends about church bells that continue to ring from beneath the earth or water. In France, the sunken city of Ys is said to toll its bell from beneath the waves during storms.
Oh, creepy.
In England and Wales, tales speak of submerged villages as well, whose bells can still be heard on quiet nights in May, a time associated with thin boundaries between the world. These bells are often tied to moral warnings, towns that sank due to sin or pride, with the bells serving as eternal reminders of divine judgment. So Chelsea, I'm going to tell you now about the lost city of Ys. So Ys, spelt Y-S, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Is said to have been a magnificent city built below sea level on the coast of Brittany, protected by a massive dike with gates that opened at low tide to allow ships into bustling ports. It was ruled by King Gradlin, a pious and noble monarch, and his daughter Princess Dehut, whose wild and hedonistic ways ultimately led to the city's downfall. Now, there are multiple versions of the legend, but most agree on these core elements. Dehut, often portrayed as a sorceress or seductress, hosted lavish parties and took lovers nightly. One night, she stole her father's key to the dike gates and either through drunken revelry or deliberate sabotage opened the gates during high tide, allowing the Atlantic Ocean to flood the city. As the waters rose, Saint Winnowola? I can't.
I like all of those versions.
Guinole.
I can't choose.
A holy man warned Gradlin to flee. He escaped on horseback, but Dehut was swept away by the sea. Some say transformed into a Morgane, a sea spirit. Now, one of the most haunting elements of the legend is the claim that the bells of Ys still toll beneath the waves, especially during storms or at twilight. Locals in the Bay de Dornanes, or Dornané, I don't know it's French, where ease is said to lie, have reported hearing phantom chimes echoing from the depths. These spectral sounds are interpreted as either a warning or a lament, a reminder of the city's hubris and loss. The city of ease is widely regarded as a mythical place and not a historical or archaeological reality, and while it holds a powerful place in Breton folklore, there is no concrete evidence that ease ever physically existed beneath the Bay of Dornané or anywhere else along the coast of Brittany. So just keep that in mind. The story of ease is rich in Christian symbolism and moral themes, pride, sin, divine punishment, which suggests it's functioned as a cautionary tale rather than a historical account. And the character of Princess de Hoot, often blamed for the city's destruction, embodies the archetype of the dangerous temptress, a common figure in medieval Christian storytelling. Likely not a true story, but there's still every now and then a rumor of bells ringing off the coast of France for the lost city of...
Still creepy.
And hey, the British Channel, or whatever, what do you call that? Is that the French or the British Channel between them?
I don't know. The channel between the UK and France.
It's not the only lost city in the channel between France and the UK. There is also the city of Lyonnais. I believe it's said that way. It's Lyonesse. So the lost city of Lyonnais was believed to stretch from the lands ending Cornwall to the Isle of Scilly, occupying fertile plains and coastal towns. According to legend, it boasted over 140 churches, flourishing villages and orchards, a towering cathedral, possibly built atop what is now the Seven Stones Reef. This reef, located about 18 miles west of Land's End, is still marked on nautical charts and considered treacherous. Some say it's the last remnants of the Drowned Kingdom. Now, Lyonnais is most famously known as the home of Sir Tristan, one of the Knights of the Round Table, and central figures in the tragic romance of Tristan and Isolde. I don't know how to say that name either. Jeez. I didn't think these names would be so hard. In some of the versions of the Arthurian cycle, Lyonnais is portrayed as a noble and powerful kingdom deeply tied to the fate of Camelot. The legend says Lyonnais was swallowed by the sea in a single night with no survivors except one man, Trevelyan, who escaped on horseback and gave rise to the Cornish Trevelyan family. The cause of the flood varies. Some say divine punishment for sin or pride, a natural disaster like a massive tidal wave, or a magical collapse tied to the fall of Camelot. Local fishermen have long claimed to hear phantom church bells ringing beneath the waves during storms. Some maps even mark reefs with names like City and Court, hinting at submerged structures. And the third one are, of course, Pantre Gwaelod. I can't say it because this is a Welsh Atlantis. Pantre Gwaelod is a legendary sunken kingdom said to also lie beneath this area in the Cardigan Bay off the west coast of Wales. According to the myth, it was once a fertile lowland protected by seawalls and sluice gates. The kingdom's downfall came when Sethenin, a drunken gatekeeper, failed in his duty, allowing the sea to flood the land and drown the cities. One of the most enduring elements of the legend is the haunting sound of bells. Welsh folklore holds that on quiet nights or during storms, the bells of Pantre Gwaelod churches can still be heard ringing from beneath the waves. These ghostly chimes are said to echo across the bay, a mournful reminder of the kingdom's tragic fate.
Yeah.
There's even a traditional Welsh poem that captures its haunting imagery. Beneath the sea and its waves are many cities fair that used to listen to bells ringing at coming night. The bells of Pantre Gwaelod vanish beneath the water. I find it really interesting how many sunken cities with haunted bells are in this area, when this is something I'd really never heard of before.
That's a fair point.
And they all seem to be like Atlantis-esque, like they were pretty prominent places and then just sunk.
Well, it's funny that they would place those kind of important cities below sea level.
Yeah, but they kept doing it.
Yep.
But of course, undersea church bells aren't the only type of phantom church bells.
There's more?
On a cold October morning in the late 1800s, the quiet streets of Charlottetown, Prince Edward Island, were startled awake by the unexpected tolling of the church bell at the Kirk of St. James, a historic Presbyterian church built in 1878. The bell rang out clearly and deliberately. Yet when townspeople arrived to investigate, they found the church locked and empty. No one had been scheduled to ring the bell, and no one was those inside. Witnesses claimed to have seen four ghostly women in the bell tower, their forms faint and shimmering in the early morning light. The figures were described as solemn, their presence eerie, but not malevolent. The townspeople were shaken, unsure what to make of the strange occurrence. Later that same day, news arrived that a ship had gone down in the Northumberland Strait between Charlottetown and Pictou, Nova Scotia. Tragically, four women perished in the wreck, the same number as the spectral bell ringers seen that morning.
Oh, okay.
The coincidence was too eerie to ignore, and the story quickly took root in local legend.
I can
Over
see
the
it.
Years, the tale of the phantom bell ringers has been retold as a supernatural omen, a ghostly warning of impending tragedy. Some believe the spirits were trying to alert the town to the disaster at sea. Others interpret the event as a moment where the veil between the worlds thinned, allowing the dead to reach out in one final act of communion.
Yeah, I see that one.
The Kirk of St. James remains a functioning church today, and while the bell no longer rings on its own, the legend lives on. Visitors and locals alike still speak of the fateful morning, and some claim that on quiet autumn days, if you listen closely, you might still hear the faint toll of the bell and wonder who or what is ringing it. And we move now from the spectral tolling of ancient sunken kingdoms to a sound that is chillingly modern, deeply personal, and terrifyingly real. Sometimes the bell you hear isn't an echo of a tragic past or a supernatural warning from the elements. It's a deliberate sound made by a figure lurking in the shadows. We end the
what?
Journey with an account that came straight from the internet, a true horror story that brings malevolent powers of the bell from folklore right into the deep dark woods
no.
of a young woman's summer.
Oh, that
yeah,
is creepy.
Kelsey, this is a story from Reddit. It's from the subreddit Let's Not Meet, which apparently is supposed to be your true horror stories.
Okay.
So I can't confirm this story for real.
So
it was posted 5 years ago.
Ding!
Wilhelm Baudelaire, titled Man in Forest Kills Animals and Chases After Me While Ringing Bells in the Dark. And this is not the whole telling of the story. I did use an AI to shorten it because it was incredibly long, but we get the gist of it still.
Okay.
While home from university for the summer, I returned to a secluded forest trail I'd known since childhood. Dense woods, winding streams, and a man-made lake surrounded by silence. On my first solo walk, I reached the stream and knelt to run my hands through the water when I heard it, a bell ringing from somewhere to the north. It wasn't a light jingle like a dog collar. It was heavy, deliberate, and rang with a strange urgency. I listen curious. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just trying to picture the bell. I was picturing
a
gong.
I almost feel
at
like
first.
It's a town crier one.
Yeah, I think you're right. At first I was going with a gong, but I don't think that's the right feel for the story. I think it's town crier bell. Yeah, okay.
I listened curious and began walking towards the sound. It moved as I moved, always just out of reach until it stopped abruptly after 5 minutes. I tried to rationalize it, maybe a lost hunting dog, maybe something caught in a tin, but nothing made sense. Then I found the badger. It was freshly dead, decapitated with precision, the wound crawling with maggots, but not yet fully decomposed.
What?
It had clearly been killed with a knife. The bell had followed the stream, and so had I. The badger had been placed, or killed, along the same path. I felt a chill, but pushed the thought aside and made my way home. A week later, I went back. It was raining heavily, and I left around 6 p.m., planning to return before dark. I reached the river and then turned back as the light began to fade. The forest was loud with rain, and I was moving quickly, head down, when I collided with something hanging from a tree. It was the badger, but now its head had been tied grotesquely to its front paws. The whole thing strung up like a sick ornament. It was dripping green fluid, and I was soaked in it. I gagged, confused by the mix of rain and rot, and then it hit me. Someone had done this after I passed by earlier. Someone had been watching me. And then the bell rang again. This time it was louder, more persistent, echoing through the trees. I called my dad in a panic, told him to meet me at the bend in the path, the closest point to where I was. I started running, but the bell kept ringing, on and off, surrounding me. Every sound was muffled by the rain, and I felt like I was moving through a dream. I couldn't breathe properly, couldn't think. I was crying, stumbling, coughing, trying to stay upright as I ran. My mom stayed on the phone, shouting that they were close. I kept hearing things, branches snapping, faint movements, but I couldn't tell what was real. But then I heard it, clear footsteps behind me, and the bell louder than ever. I turned and saw him, a tall figure at the edge of the clearing, slowly creeping towards me, ringing a bell in front of his chest. He was staring straight at me. I ran harder than I ever have in my life, screaming that I was on the phone with the police and that my dad was nearby. I didn't dare look back again. I was soaked, breathless, and terrified. My phone felt like my only lifeline. I dropped my bag without realizing. The bell kept ringing, and I could feel it in my bones. Then I heard my dad's voice. He was close, calling my name. I ran towards him and practically collapsed into his arms, and he heard the bell too. My mom's still on the phone, heard it through the speaker. We didn't wait around. We got in the car and left. To this day, I do not know who that man was, what he wanted, or if he's still out there in these woods. But I know what I heard. The bell wasn't just a sound, it was a warning, a lure, a presence, and I've never gone back. And that's the end of that one.
Interesting. Interesting choice. At one point, I was picturing that it was just a bell that was killing, like, the badger. Just stringing it up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but then, of course, it was a man just ringing a bell.
Holding it back, yeah. Of course. To be fair, they describe the person as a bell, like a person holding a bell, but we don't get a good description, so it's hard to say whether or not it
could have been a bell.
It's just like, it could have been a shadow person.
Could have been, it could have been a shadow person full of bells, shaped in a person shape.
Yeah.
Just saying.
So this holiday season, as sleigh bells jingle and carols echo through frosted streets, remember, not every bell is a symbol of joy. Some toll from beneath the sea, some from sunken kingdoms like Ys and Cantergwold. Some ring from phantom towers, warning of tragedy yet to come. Some chime from the shadows of the forest, held by hands that should not exist. Whether it's the bell buzzers circling overhead, the swamp-born mimicry of the bell bottoms, or a lone figure in the woods ringing a bell just for you, these stories remind us that sound can be more than festive. It can be a lure, a warning, a presence. Thanks for joining us in this winter's walk through the uncanny. And if you hear a bell tonight, maybe it's Santa. Maybe it's something else entirely.
Yeah.
I have been Taylor, here with Chelsea. We are Journey to the Fringe. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week.
And that's a good Christmas lesson. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Journey to the Fringe. If you have liked what you have listened to, please like, share, subscribe, or follow, depending on what venue you are listening to us through. Also, please, if possible, leave a 5-star review, as that really helps us in the algorithms. Should you wish to interact with us, please check us out on your social media of choice. I bet you we are there. And if you really want to communicate with us and give us ideas for new episodes or tell us that we're wrong and terrible, either way, please send us an email at journeytothefringe@gmail.com. For now, I'll see you in the next episode.